Evening, everybody. So let's start with cultivating our motivation. And here we are again, another week. Death hasn't come yet. You've had another week to create virtue, another week to contemplate the Dharma, and now the opportunity to listen to another teaching on the four establishments of mindfulness. And so let's do this with a happy mind and with the bodhicitta motivation, really holding in our mind the welfare of all living beings, no matter who they are, no matter whether we like them or don't like them, whether they scare us or welcome us, but to see all sentient beings equally as having been kind, as wanting happiness, not suffering, and especially seeing them all as completely under the influence of their afflictions and karma. And so they act without really knowing what they're doing so often, just as we act without knowing what we're doing. And so to have compassion and to see that they have the Buddha nature, the possibility to be free from all these afflictions, and so to generate the wish to bring that about and to become a Buddha ourselves in order to do that. So holding a mind of equanimity is really very important, especially, you know, when there's things in the news that are very troubling, and when you see so much, fractionating
conflict.
Conflict, you know, over views, over ways of doing things and so on, and to really come back to, but they're all wanting happiness, they're all overwhelmed by afflictions. Yeah, they've all been kind to me, and they all don't have a self that is, you know, independent and permanent and that inherently possesses these qualities that I either like or don't like. I was thinking about this because after the shooting in Tucson, then there was a gun show the next weekend in Tucson, and then there is a huge gun show in Vegas now with, like, forget how many people, whether it was, I don't know, thousands and thousands of people going to this huge gun show in Las Vegas and not wanting any gun legislation, not thinking that it would help at all. You know, saying there's people saying we need better mental health care services, but of course they don't want more taxes that are going to pay for them. But I was thinking about all these people, you know, looked at these pictures of people being at this gun show and being so excited and so happy. And I was horrified. To me, it was terrifying to see that. I mean, really frightening. To see that, and you know, my mind went, what kind of place am I living in? Oh my goodness, you know, this is madness. And then I had to, you know, come back to, but they all want to be happy and their minds are overwhelmed by afflictions. Yeah? And when the mind is overwhelmed by afflictions, as I know very well, we think stupid things and do stupid things, because I certainly have. Yeah? And so all these beings have the possibility to become fully enlightened Buddhas. They don't have some inherently existent personality or inherently existent beliefs about guns, you know? And so to look beyond what appears to us right now when we see a person or people or any living being that just, you know, generates a strong reaction in us. Look beyond who they are now and see they always haven't been that. They always won't be that. There's no self there. And their lack of a self being there is actually their Buddha potential. That's what means that they have the ability to change and they have the ability to, you know, relinquish the defilements and generate all the good qualities. Yeah. So same with us too. All of us exactly the same. Okay? So in that way, you know, to be able to shift the mind and come to a bigger perspective so that we don't, so that we can keep our heart open and our mind open and not just shut living beings out. Because, you know, it just takes a slight change of circumstance and we meet them in a little bit different situation, they could be our best friends. Okay. So, we're going to continue with the quiz, the questions on the quiz. Okay, so we were on number 7. How do the three feelings relate to the three kinds of dukkha? So, what's the correlation? Mm-hmm. Who wants to start? Who wants to start?
Okay. The feelings, the unpleasant feelings relate to the dukkha, suffering,
mm-hmm.
Because they're obvious pain. The pleasant feelings relate to the dukkha of change because they appear to be happiness, yet they're impermanent. And with a slight change of condition, they turn into pain. And they're never wholly satisfying to begin with. And the either pleasant or painful feelings relate to the pervasive condition, dukkha, because they're a result of contaminated action and they're experienced by someone whose soul is afflicted with ignorance and afflictions and karma. And they still will be transient and painful feelings will replace them.
Yeah. Okay. So the I should have given you the mic so you could say that directly into the mic. So the painful feelings correlate with the dukkha of suffering, because quite obviously pain is, you know, that dukkha. And pleasant feelings correlate with, are the dukkha of change, because they appear to be happiness, but if we experience them for any length of time, they're going to turn into suffering. And they're never completely satisfying anyway. And then the neutral feelings that are neither painful nor pleasant are the pervading conditioned dukkha, because you know, they're experienced still under the influence of ignorance. And they can relate, especially to the concentrations of the fourth dhyana and above, where you experience those feelings, and somebody could crave for those kind of rebirths, and so attachment to those feelings, to neutral feelings, can keep you really stuck in samsara. Okay, so we know all of that. Now, as you go through the day, do you identify different feelings you have as, you know, the dukkha of suffering, the changeable dukkha, or conditioning pervasive dukkha? Do you stop to identify your feelings that way? Little bit?
More since the teaching, since we've been meditating on these, more with the calling something pleasurable, mm-hmm. and sitting there saying, why do I think this is? And it kind of disintegrates,
yeah.
that pleasure label.
Okay, so you've been really doing it with the pleasurable ones, which are the big hook for us in the desire realm. Yeah, because we have so much attachment for them. And so you've found in your meditation, because we're in retreat now, really focusing on them and saying, why are they pleasurable? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really looking at what's the result of these feelings and what's the result of being attached to them. Yeah, so it can be quite interesting to just kind of do a little life review, looking at the pleasant feelings you've had and how you've gotten attached to them and where that attachment has led you. Oh dear, I see some faces. Yeah, because this really links in, you know, this is a way of linking the establishment of mindfulness on feelings to the eight worldly concerns. Yeah, because, you know, feeling happiness when we get the things we want, unhappiness when we get the things we don't want, then reacting with attachment, reacting with being upset, and then the actions we do and the situations we find ourselves in, you know, where following, you know, where lack of mindfulness of those feelings has just let us generate afflictive emotions, and then lack of mindfulness of the result of the afflictive emotions has led us just to do all sorts of things this life, and created the cause for who knows what in future lives. Yeah? So this is a way, you know, to really kind of bring it home so that we don't leave what we're learning into, as an intellectual thing. Yeah? But really examine and be mindful as time, you know, as we're going through our life. Painful feelings come up. Yeah. Oh, my feelings are hurt. But, you know, we don't say, I'm having painful feelings and my feelings are hurt. We say, that person did this! And we get angry. Yeah? So, you know, with all these things, just to be aware and, you know, look at the causes of the feelings, the results of the feelings, where they take us, and how hooked we are to our feelings, how incredibly attached we are. You know, because this attachment to our feelings, and here I don't mean just attachment to pleasant feelings, I mean how we consider our own feelings as so crucially important. This is the self-centered mind, and this is one of the big obstacles to generate bodhicitta, is that we're so hooked into what we're feeling and needing to take care of what we're feeling to the exclusion of other people. Yeah. So I feel pain, so everybody else ceases to exist in the moment I feel pain, because the only important thing is to reduce my pain. Yeah. And when I have the opportunity for pleasure, other sentient beings, again, cease to exist, because the most important thing is, how can I get my pleasure? Yeah. So we can see how that kind of, you know, self-centeredness, focused on our own feelings, becomes a hindrance to generating bodhicitta. Yeah? A hindrance and a distraction. So it's good to kind of review these things in this way, because then we can link all different parts of the Lam Rim and all different practices together. Yeah? So that we really get some kind of comprehensive understanding of what the Buddha is saying to us. Otherwise, it seems like all these things are in individualized compartments and that we can't get near. Yes.
And actually, you think this is something I've been studying and wondering if it goes like this. When Geshe, when Kinzer Tetok was here, he talked to us about how self-grasping ignorance leads to the inappropriate attention, leads to the affliction.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it actually goes contact, feeling, then the ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if that ignorance mm-hmm. is the part that assents to the inherent existence.
Yeah, yeah, the ignorance. Okay, so you were saying that when Khansa Rinpoche was explaining the 12 links, he was saying that there's ignorance, and then that leads to inappropriate attention and the afflictions and karma. And here, now you're looking at feelings and contact, mm-hmm. you know, and where do they fit in? And so, yeah, first, contact, and then the feelings, and then there's ignorance in there,
mm-hmm.
and because of the ignorance, and that leads to the inappropriate attention, and the craving, and the afflictions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, already, though, what I wonder about that is, already when you have contact,
mm-hmm.
you already... all your senses see things as inherently existent, but it's that after the feeling, your karma ripening in that feeling that is so pleasant or unpleasant already,
mm-hmm.
then it's after that that it kind of all gets ramped up because it feels so real then?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because we can see it's when the karma ripens as a pleasant or unpleasant feeling, we grasp onto that feeling. It appears it's truly existent. We grasp onto it as truly existent. Yeah, and that's why we react. Whereas if, you know, we can, in our meditation, see that feeling is a conditioned phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
It happened due to causes and conditions. So it's changing, it's impermanent, it doesn't have an essence to it. Our new kitty is in the room, supposed to be watching the teachings, but she's doing some interesting scowling out. So excuse us if we get distracted once in a while. Our mother sentient being is providing some entertainment. Okay. So, you know, bringing all these things together, being mindful of the feelings, and like you did, really seeing where the ignorance comes in, and then watching how that unfolds in our own experience, okay? And then applying counteractive measures. Because especially if we, you know, when we have a feeling, it seems so real, and it seems like it's always going to be there, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, some little bit of pleasure, some little bit of pain, it seems like so real and so permanent. But if we look at it and see, it's just, you know, a blip on the screen, yeah, that arose due to causes and conditions. And something that arises due to causes and conditions doesn't have its own essence. It's completely dependent on other things.
And it's so unreliable because
right.
the contact that you're making in another day, you can have a completely different feeling.
Right.
At the same time.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very unreliable. Yeah. The same object, if the conditions change, the object's the same, you could have a completely different feeling relating to the object.
We have that with snow.
Right.
We love it.
Hate it. Right.
Then we think it's a burden. Then we think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
At least that's been going through my mind.
Right. And that it's that way with everything. Yeah. You know? We like it, then we get bored with it, we get tired of it, it's difficult and painful, and then it changes again. So the thing is to really come back and constantly say to ourselves, it's conditioned, yeah? And really reflect that anything that's conditioned doesn't have its own inherent essence. Okay? So we don't want to just leave it as it's conditioned. We should take it to its condition, therefore it's impermanent. But we don't want to leave it just with that either. It's conditioned, therefore it lacks any inherent nature. Okay? So take it all the way in our understanding. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
I've been working a little bit with attachment to food and taste and kind of not trying to go there with my mind, and then it seems like everything gets kind of flat.
Ah.
And then I don't know what to do with that. I don't know how to keep the mind up. It feels like it goes too far down.
Okay. That was actually leading into the next thing I was going to talk about, so good going. Is that when we start seeing these things in a more realistic way, like you said, you've been watching the pleasure and pleasant and unpleasant feelings from food, and that when you do, then all of a sudden eating, well, not all of a sudden, but over time, eating kind of becomes flat and disinteresting. And here's something that, you know, you used to enjoy, and now it's just blah. So how is that helping your life to be happier and better? Yeah? So this is a kind of stage, I think, that we often go through as we're looking at pleasant feelings and as we're looking at our attachment. Many people say to me that they have a similar thing happen in terms of friendship, that, you know, when they really start examining their friends and friendship, they see that, you know, it used to be like so much fun hanging out with your friends and talking to them and doing this and doing that. And as they start reflecting on it, they see that actually, you know, it really wasn't that much fun. And there were all these problems that came up, interpersonal problems, and even there weren't, then you separated. And so then after a while you start feeling like, ugh. You know, your friends aren't so interesting, and then it's like, well, who are my friends going to be now? And you feel very flat. So similar thing, just different object. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And I think many people, I think most of you have gone through that, yeah? Because I remember we've discussed it before. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And so, you know, at here is where what you're starting to do is seeing the disadvantages of cyclic existence. But you haven't really, your antidotes to the afflictions haven't been, aren't yet quite strong enough to bring you a sense of fulfillment and peace from them. Mm-hmm. Okay? They're just right now at the level of getting rid of the attachment or the anger, but they're not yet at the level of bringing fulfillment and peace. Also, so it hasn't brought us peace in our mind yet. And also because we're getting used to a different kind of happiness. Before we were really, what was interesting to us was the sense pleasure happiness that gave us a rush and a bing and a buzz. And what we're getting used to now is kind of the peace and tranquility that comes from not having that buzz. Okay? Yeah? Is that... Can you see that?
Yeah? I've been just looking at having a neutral feeling in my mind. I'm like, I'm alive.
Yeah, sometimes we feel like if I have a neutral feeling, I'm not alive. Especially when it's somebody that's very hooked on their emotions,
yeah.
And our emotions make us feel alive.
Yeah.
Okay, so those of us who are very attuned to our emotion, who are emotion addicts,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, who are always feeling things so deeply, when our emotions start to become more balanced, it's like we don't know what to do with ourselves. Because we're so used to, oh, I feel so good. Oh, I feel so depressed. You know, oh, I feel this. Oh, I feel that. You know, our Sarah Bernhardt is retiring. Yeah? And we don't know what to do with ourselves. Yeah? So it's a whole process of getting used to something different and learning that it actually is much more satisfying, you know? Because when we're hooked on, you know, all my feelings, you know, there's a big I, and we get a real buzz out of there being a big I, but it's also very uncomfortable, yeah, to always be dragged around by what I happen to be feeling about one moment or another. Okay, and the same thing with the pleasurable feelings, you know, they give us a rush, but like, you know, then we get bored with them, then we can't get them, then they aren't as satisfying as we thought they were going to be, and all sorts of problems come up. Okay, so, you know, to really see that, you know, because we're so hooked on our old way of relating to these things. And to begin to see, no, they aren't really all that they were cut out to be. And, you know, to be more peaceful and tranquil with a feeling of contentment in our mind is actually much better in the long run. You know, those of you who've been to His Holiness's teachings, he often says, you know, when questions about emotions come up, like people say, well, don't you need suffering to know happiness, you know? How can we give up our suffering because then we won't know happiness? And, you know, people say these kinds of things and, you know, or if you give up your anger, then, you know, what's happening to your whole inner life? Yeah. And His Holiness says, well, maybe I don't have quite as many ups as other people and I don't have quite as many downs as other people. But, you know, it's just more balanced and smooth. And that's quite nice. Yeah? Yeah, it is quite nice to be balanced and smooth, isn't it? Not so reactive.
I was wondering if that's why they went so much for the neutral, because it's so hard to go from pleasant to unpleasant. You'd
right.
just rather be in neutral.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with that.
Right. And that's why, as you're going through the jhanas, eventually the pleasant feeling that you get in the jhanas becomes disturbing, mm-hmm. and you want the neutral feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah? But then we get attached to that.
I think it has a lot to do with how our culture defines happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't define happiness as that calm contentment.
Yeah.
We call that boredom or label it different things.
Yeah.
And happiness is that buzz, you know, bungee jumping and skydiving
and
gun shows.
Yeah, right. That's happiness, isn't it?
So it really is interesting what is happening.
Happiness, right. And I think this is a major question for us because we are very conditioned from our by our society to see certain things as happiness and then to think I need these things and then to get them and not feeling at all happy because we never really investigated, do these things bring happiness? We just took the word of society which was telling us that these things are happiness, but never really examining for ourselves if having these actually makes us happy. Yeah. So I think this is, you know, a very, very important meditation to do. And it also fits in to when we're doing the four immeasurables, because we're wishing sentient beings to have happiness and its causes. And so what is it we're wishing them? You know, like you said, do we want them to have the excitement of going to the gun show? You know, and the adrenaline rush of, you know, seeing all these toys there that you can get and then you can be powerful and strong and, you know, is that what we're wishing sentient beings when we're generating metta, love? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we really need to think of, you know, what is the happiness that we're seeking and what is the happiness that we are wishing for others? Hmm? Okay. Question 8. We'll get through the quiz someday. Okay, so describe some of the ways to meditate on mindfulness of the feelings. So what are some of the ways that you meditate on mindfulness of the feelings? Yeah?
What I've been trying out is to experience the feeling as soon as it arises. Mm-hmm. And try to figure out why I'm calling it when I'm calling it. Mm-hmm. And to try to separate what's the bodily mental sensation without the label of what I think it's supposed to be called.
Okay. So you've been being mindful of the feelings as soon as they arise, mm-hmm. and then asking yourself, why do I consider this pleasant or unpleasant? Mm-hmm. And then
and
the
then
last
I've been
part
trying to isolate the, like the actual experience, I'm so hooked into giving it a name and starting the story. That
yeah,
really
okay. So you're very hooked into, oh, there's pleasure, oh, attachment, I want more, how can I get this, this give me this, you know, or pain, why is this person doing something? Mm-hmm. And so watching how the feeling so quickly goes into an affliction, and then you're off and running, and you're no longer actually mindful of the feeling that started the whole thing off.
Right. There's another whole feeling going on by the mental proliferation now that's left the original feeling.
Yeah, right. And so the mental proliferation takes you away with its feelings. And so you're trying to come back to the raw sensation of if it was physical discomfort to feeling that, mm-hmm. you know, and stopping the story, and if it's, you know, mental or physical pleasure, feeling that, but being aware of it and watching it rise, watching it cease, mm-hmm. you know, without being reactive. Okay, so that's one way to meditate on feelings. Good. What are some other ways?
Mm-hmm. Looking at the causes and then the results.
Yeah, so looking at the causes of the result, the causes of the feelings, looking at the present characteristics, and looking at the results of the feelings. Okay, so really going through and looking at that, observing that.
Yeah, which for me, especially with pain, with unpleasant feelings, has been really helpful as far as catching the wanting to blame a person or wanting to blame a situation, but really stopping and
yeah.
Because it's so uncomfortable anyway, it's easier to recognize.
Right. So as you're talking about especially unpleasant mental feelings mm-hmm. by looking at the causes of them and the results of them, then stopping yourself from blaming other people and getting angry and that, which actually just brings more unpleasantness, doesn't it? Okay, what are other ways to meditate on feelings?
One thing that's been helping me is especially in the meditation hall with physical discomfort, mm-hmm. is a bit of what Venerable Senpai said, but relabeling it instead of jumping to its pain or I can't stand it or the story is spinning off, just saying this is a sensation.
Yeah.
And if I just stick with it's a sensation, it really cools down. I can't.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, mm-hmm. that one word.
Yeah.
It's a sensation.
Okay, so rather than labeling it pleasant or unpleasant, go back just to the sensation.
Just the sensation.
It's just a sensation. Yeah. Yeah, and that really cools it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was thinking that kind of in that same vein also to look at, like if I'm having pain, like what part of it is actually restlessness?
Okay.
So I go to the sensation and it helps to separate it out.
Right. So paying attention to the feeling, mm-hmm. and to the actual physical sensation, mm-hmm. then helps you, again, not go into
the pain experience.
Yeah. Oh.
The pain experience is bigger than just going back to the feeling.
Right, okay.
Add all this stuff in.
Yeah. Yes. So you're looking at like what is actually pain and what is restlessness, mm-hmm. which is a reaction to the pain, which is actually going to create more pain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And just going to the feeling or going back just to the raw sense data too. Yeah. Rather than letting the mind go into restlessness and the body go into restlessness. Other ways? Yeah?
To pay attention to the momentary changes that I'm feeling and through that recognize their insubstantiality and see that there's a self or person that is experiencing them.
Yeah. So watching the feeling change. Yeah? And so, you know, seeing that it's not one solid, concrete feeling, but it's changing moment by moment. And then, because it's changing moment by moment like that, we can see it doesn't have any core, doesn't have any essence there. And then also questioning who is the self that is experiencing this? Yeah? I mean, sometimes we feel, oh, the feeling is who I am. If we're doing that, then to say, wait a minute. Yeah. Or sometimes we feel like there's a self that possesses the feeling. So who is that self, or what is that self that possesses that feeling? Yeah. And just in general, what is the relationship between the feeling and the self? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That week that I did the talk on the problems of the body,
mm-hmm.
the review for that, mm-hmm. talked about with some, but I've been using this since then, is these things that were in the sutras about this is not mine, this is not me, this is not myself.
Yeah.
And I've done that many, many times, and mm-hmm. it's really been helpful to kind of diffuse, I mean, to just see where. What is it that feels like it's me in this situation?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've been...
any of these four.
Yeah. Okay, so with any, the body, feelings, mind, and phenomena, what you've been doing is going back in the Pali Suttas, mm-hmm. how it says, you know, this is not I, this is not mine, and this is not myself. Okay, and to really watching that and observing that and investigating and see how the feeling or the mind or the body or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know.
I have a question about that, though.
Yeah.
It seems like it, that line of questioning, which I've been doing now for some weeks,
mm-hmm.
many times, it seems like it leads to kind of kind of looking at identity.
Yes, of course you're looking at identity.
But I don't know if it leads me to think about inherent existence, existence of in the experience.
Okay, yeah, it's looking at identity, but our whole notion of identity is imbued with grasping an inherent existence. Yeah, because, you know, is the feeling me? Well, what's our notion of me? Is the feeling I? What's our notion of I? Yeah, and we feel like there's some strong I there that's independent. Mm-hmm. Can this feeling be a strong independent I? Is that possible? Okay.
I don't know, it seems like I have to really take my mind there. I'm wondering if in the Pali Canon those words are the way that you lead yourself to that SSSE.
to the lack of, yeah, that investigation, you know, this is not I, this is not mine, this is not myself, okay, is a leading you to understand that there's no self-sufficient, substantially existent person. It can also lead you to understand there's no inherently existent person. Depends upon what you're identifying and seeing, are these things this? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if this inherently existent person existed, could it be any of these things? Okay, so there's also some other ones. Did you come up with other ones? Ways to meditate on mindfulness of the feeling.
Did we do the causes of the
feelings? Yeah, we did the causes. Another one is contemplate feelings of past, present, and future. Okay. What happened with the feelings of the past? What are our present feelings? What are we expecting for our feelings in the future? Okay. And then contemplate the disadvantages of these samsaric feelings, how they lead to craving and clinging. Okay. And so specifically, you know, seeing... this is going to get us into the next question, but seeing how we react to these three kinds of feelings lead us into the three kinds of craving. Okay, so that's our next question. What are the three types of craving, and how do they relate to the three types of feeling? And make an example of each type of craving in your life. Yeah.
So the first one is craving for sense pleasure.
Okay, craving for sense pleasure.
So I went right into the pleasant, which is anything that stimulates me through the senses, food, beauty, good friends, nice sounds. I'm hooked in. Mm-hmm. So there's the pleasant feeling with the sense pleasure.
Okay, so pleasant feelings from any physical objects or people or also mental objects. The things you think about, you know, and how the pleasant feeling will lead to the craving for more sense pleasure. Yeah. Okay, that's one.
Then the second one is freedom from pain. So I correlated that with the unpleasant feeling. Anyway,
freedom from pain?
Separate from
pain. Oh, yeah.
Craving.
Yeah, the craving to be free from pain. Yeah. Okay, so that's correlated with
unpleasant
feelings, right.
And this is craving any way, anyhow, for me to alleviate physical or mental pain or discomfort, anything from hunger, headaches, afflictive emotions, loneliness, cold.
Yeah.
Anything.
Okay.
And it's the object for me that, you know, is the cause of all.
Okay, so the unpleasant feelings, either from physical things, we're cold, we're hungry, the bed's too hard, the bed's too soft, or from mental things, you know, what this person said disturbed my mind, or they're insulting me, they're blaming me, you know, uncomfortable mental feelings like that. And then we immediately go into craving to be free from those painful feelings. Yeah.
And then the last one was craving for existence, which correlates with the neutral feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's just generally spacing out. my note said that it brought craving for more rebirths in samsara,
yeah.
particularly in the form and the formless realms.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So neutral feelings align with craving for existence. Yeah. Or sometimes it's said they're aligned with craving for the non-diminishment of the neutral feeling. Okay. So in your life, you're saying that when you have a neutral feeling, you just generally space out, and you're craving more spacing out. Okay. But in your notes, it says something that you're not quite sure you understand, which is, you know, it's also called craving for existence. You know, when you want the neutral feeling. So why is it called craving for existence? Because in the fourth form realm of absorption, and in the four formless realm of absorptions, the feeling you have there is neutrality or equanimity. And so if you're attached to that feeling, you know, which we were just saying is much nicer than the excited feeling of pleasure, even if it's the pleasure of concentration, then you crave for rebirth in those meditative absorptions, but you're still stuck in cyclic existence. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're very fit, you know, we're in the desire realm. So when we tend to think of things, we just tend to think of the craving in terms of the desire realm. But when your craving for desire realm things starts to go down and you begin to experience some of the bliss from, you know, going into the jhanic states, yeah, then that's when you might crave the bliss of that meditation for the first three jhanas. And then for the fourth jhana and the formless realms, craving the neutrality feeling. And then, you know, you're at that point not interested in desire realm anymore. It seems so yucky. But you can get very attached to those realms of meditative absorption and crave them. But because your mind doesn't have the wisdom that eliminates the ignorance that is the root of samsara, craving for more existence in samsara in those meditative states doesn't really get you anywhere in the long run.
In that state, have you forgotten that it will end?
Yeah.
Well,
so the question in that state, have you forgotten that it's going to end? Pretty much, yes. Just the same way when we have a pleasant feeling now, we don't think of it's ending. You know, you experience that, and you can stay in that meditation state for a really long time. You know, you don't think about, oh, it's going to end sometime, because you haven't generated any of the, you know, even the direct perceiver of impermanence at that point. You know, because you can generate all these states of deep concentration, but not apply them to impermanence or emptiness or selflessness or anything else. Yeah, because these states of concentration, the non-Buddhists also attain. Yeah, it's not necessarily a Buddhist practice. So that's why it's not just getting the concentrations, it's how you use them. Okay?
So is there an object of those states other than the neutral feeling itself?
So is there an object of those states? Yes. Because when you've cultivated the jhanas, you have a meditation object. It could be one of the four immeasurables. It could be the kasina, certain colors. It could be, you know, all sorts of other objects. Yeah? And so those are the objects. And that's when you're in the four jhanic stages, the four form realm absorptions. When you go into the formless realms, okay, first you have
infinite space.
Yeah, infinite space, infinite consciousness, nothingness, and then neither perception, discrimination or non-discrimination, okay? So when you're at the first one of infinite space is your object.
So then that would, that type of state, the formless mm-hmm. states, aren't used to meditate on the emptiness?
Usually don't use those formless realm states to meditate on emptiness or impermanence, because the mind is like too much, too absorbed. Yeah. Some very high level bodhisattvas may be able to do that. But in general, you know, it's within the four realms.
The capacity to analyze, to use.
Has
gone out the window.
Yeah, the analysis is gone because you're so deeply.
So could we say it is somewhat equivalent to zoning out, spacing out?
Is it equivalent to zoning out? Or
it's like super.
I guess it's a meditative, zoning out in that way, in the sense that, you're just enjoying it so much and you're not thinking, oh, I'm still in samsara and this is going to end and I'm going to follow the lower realms. So in that way, you're kind of zoned out. Yeah. That's why our teachers so often really recommend at the beginning of the practice to do the analytic meditations that make us quite aware of what samsara is and the disadvantages of samsara. Because if we don't do that and we immediately start developing a lot of concentration, we could get very attached to the concentrated states and then, leave aside the wish to do the meditations that are going to bring us an awareness of the nature of suffering, of impermanence, of selflessness, of emptiness. Okay.
So many ways to go off.
Yeah, there are so many ways to go off, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why when you learn them, to just keep on making very strong resolutions, may I never get stuck in this, may I never go in this wrong direction, may I never go in that wrong direction, and as, like I often say, when you see people making mistakes, instead of getting angry at them, saying, may I never do that, and not just may I never do that, but I've got to start, working with my mind now to make sure I never do that. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Sutras for unfollowness meditation. I listened to people.
The list of what?
There were six sutras that were listed for the follow-this meditation on the handout.
Oh, right.
I listened to Bhikkhu Bodhi's commentary on a couple of them.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was just this exact thing. This king, young king, gave up his kingdom because he had gotten a gift from Bhilasara.
Uh-huh.
And he had gone into some of these yonic states, and then he came to find the Buddha. He was in, Afghanistan. He decided to go to, to India. Mm-hmm. And then the Buddha actually left where he was and came to him.
All right.
At a potter's shed or something.
Uh-huh.
And it was really a fascinating story because he was very skillful in the way he interacted with him. And it was that exact same thing. He was leading him out of getting stuck in these states because he knew he wouldn't get to nirvana. Very well told.
That's good. I should refresh that story because I remember, he had renounced his kingdom, gone off, developed these high meditative states, then sought the Buddha. And the Buddha, they were both wandering mendicants in the potter's shed. The Buddha didn't reveal to him who he was, And then but he taught him, And then I think he died the next day, didn't he? I think that he, I think he got some the Buddha was able to lead him to some maybe stream entry or something, and then he had an accident the next day. Yeah, I think so. Unless I'm getting some stories mixed up.
There was the other one there where he taught about what we taught, following this meditation, and all those bhikkhus died.
Yeah.
So well, he knew beforehand it was going to happen. That's what it said.
Yeah.
Interesting twist.
Yeah. Okay, any questions? Because we're almost at the end. Yeah. Okay, so next week we will do question 9. What are the three types of craving and how do they relate to the three types of feeling? Oh, that's what we were just doing. Okay, so question 10. Yeah, what is the purpose of meditating on mindfulness of the feelings? Okay, so we'll do that. And then we'll go back into mindfulness of the mind.
Practical question. Mm-hmm. Because all of these meditations are so interesting and they're starting to pile up. So trying to determine really how to, you know, what sequence or what frequency or how to do them in relationship to each other so that... do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, okay. So these meditations are really interesting, and there's many of them, and, you know, what do we do? Because there's so many of them. There's different ways of approaching this. There's one way in which maybe at the beginning you want to kind of try out a lot of them to really get all these different perspectives on things. You know, eventually we kind of have to go through all of them, you know, and generate the wisdom that is associated with each single one of them. But at the beginning you might want to just kind of try them out, and then as you get, you know, more into it, then, you know, go more towards the beginning ones, maybe put more emphasis on those. It's hard to say, yeah? Because the thing is, if you're constantly switching the meditations, then you don't go very deep in any of them, yeah? But at the beginning, they are interesting and you want to see the effect, and they can have some very pronounced effects, and so you do want to try them out. Yeah? Okay. We want our cake, and we want to eat our cake and have it too. Okay. Any other questions? Anybody online? Oh, nothing? Okay. So we'll stop 1 minute early.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable and their divine actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losung's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Gauryatara, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. powerful, tensing yet so generous, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West. Lord.